Welcome to the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. This is where we answer your coaching questions, and I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, and with me is Coach Chad Timmerman.
Hey, everyone.
And our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And we're going to answer more of those questions today, and you can get them to us by going to trainerroad.com/podcast or using the hashtag AskTrainerRoad. So we'll kick things off first today by recognizing something that's pretty cool that a regular listener to the podcast and a Trainer Road user is doing right now. Sergio Sandoval, he always sends us snaps, and you can actually see him on Snapchat. He's riding across the country right now, which is pretty cool. He's been training, like doing sustained power stuff for a long time, like getting ready to ride across the country, and now he's actually doing it. He's in Arizona, maybe even into New Mexico already. So it's pretty cool.
I was like, starting from which coast? But okay.
Yeah, West Coast. Yeah, started in San Diego and he's working his way across. So kudos, Sergio. I'm sure you're listening. You've got all the stuff that you need to listen to everything across the country. But it's cool too. Like he's been showing like the gear that he has because it's self-supported. They don't have a chase car or anything like that. And my goodness, what a lot of work.
That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. It's he and his partner. They're doing it and they have like... a lot of stuff. He has tires that are like bulletproof tires, but he somehow got a nail in it the other day. But it's pretty crazy. A lot of stuff to carry and a lot of work. But
it doesn't sound like fun.
Sergio, if you find it fun, kudos. So good job, man. Yeah,
and if you want to follow us on Snapchat, what do we do?
Yeah, just look for Trainer Road, or you can even go to our Instagram channel and you can see we have our snap code in there that looks like the little yellow ghost shape thing.
On Instagram, we're Trainer Road too.
Yep, and Instagram, all social channels, you can find us at Trainer Road.
Besides Facebook. We're TrainRD. There's a guy in Japan who's like a bodybuilder who has Trainer Road. And I don't know why a Japanese guy has Trainer Road. But
yeah, and he doesn't respond.
Yeah.
We've tried
Please
to.
Please let us have it.
Asked him very kindly. We've even talked to Facebook. But yeah, so that's where you can find us. In most cases, just look for Trainer Road, and you'll see us on there. So. And by the way, on Snapchat, you can submit your questions. We answer a lot of them there. We answer today. We're going to answer a number of them here on the podcast, too. So let's get into it with Perry's question. It's a follow-up from last week. Perry had a question about intense workouts fitting into a triathlon training plan and if it was too much work or not enough. So he says, I was excited to hear my triathlon question answered on the podcast last week. Thank you. But I'm a little confused by the response. I'm about to move into a build phase for a half-distance triathlon, and surveying the low-volume plan, I see 3 hard sessions on the bike most weeks. Doesn't this go against what you guys said?
Perry, it kind of does, because I talked about having just 2 hard sessions a week. there's a couple things at work here, the first of which is this is a low-volume plan. So low-volume plans, because they're lacking in volume, I think the largest or the longest week on this is 5 hours, 45. That's your longest week. Some weeks are as short as 3.5 hours. We kind of have to add a little extra helping of intensity. It still balances though with the swim and run workouts. And frankly, I don't think that third workout in most weeks is that intense anyway. They're all sub-threshold intervals. I don't really consider it an intense workout until you start bumping above threshold. So technically, there really is just 2 hard workouts a week, probably 6 out of those 8 weeks.
That's an interesting point that you bring up, Chad, like what you consider to be high intensity.
Yeah.
Because is that subjective, or is that something that you would say is considered
like an IF
across
that
the
you
board?
Go after?
Yeah, I don't necessarily pay close attention to the intensity factor when I'm deciding whether or not it's a intense workout or not. It's typically sub-threshold versus super-threshold. So if it's under
what
threshold,
about threshold?
Threshold, I don't like to prescribe much work at threshold, period, but I would probably classify that as an intense workout, like a 4x10 threshold workout would
That's
qualify
hard.
As intense, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess in some respects that will be subjective to a certain point. If a person is used to doing one type of work and then going into a different type of work, it's going to feel plenty intense, right?
Yeah, that could influence it too. I mean, if you're coming off of even over-unders, which are largely spent below threshold, do bump above threshold, and that could qualify as an intense workout, especially if you're new to them.
There's a lot of triathletes where anything above zone 2 endurance.
Yeah,
that's intense.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of people, when I think of all the things I see on social where people are saying, praising us or cursing us when they share a picture of their workout, I think we get more cursing, and it's friendly cursing, mind you, but from people doing over-under workouts than any others. Those seem to be really hard for
They're
a lot of people.
Least favorite.
But But they're very beneficial.
That is super beneficial.
Effective, yes.
I think there's probably a correlation between the
yeah.
how much you dislike is. It and how beneficial it is.
For me, they are, and they're almost natural. Like, when I look at all the workouts, like high intensity stuff, not as easy to do. Low intensity stuff, or you know, sub threshold that's long, that's like the worst for me.
Yeah, I gotta say,
but over unders are for me super manageable. It's all kind of different. Depends.
No,
on
I'm opposite.
What
you do. Once I get to a point where I can handle over under workouts, I know my fitness is pretty good. Mm.
VO2 max and anaerobic are easy for me.
Comparatively,
threshold yeah. and like yeah, comparatively, and over unders are really hard. And then I think I get the most. I like sweet spot the most.
Yeah, interesting. All three of us are different.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. And when I look at the type of racing that I do and the type of training that I do, it's like mountain bike racing is over unders. That's the.
And that's
whole
it. They're
thing.
Applicable to so many types of racing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. They really are. Yeah. So hopefully that clears things up for you there, Perry.
Oh, wait. Over unders are. You want to describe them? Because some people probably.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
are
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So over unders. I mean, it depends what over under or. What defining line we're using. I have developed a couple sweet spot over under workouts where we're a little below, a little above like 90%, but typically we're talking about being over or under threshold. So you'll ride most commonly 5% below threshold for the bulk of the interval. And then for a minute or two or three at a time, you'll either ramp up or jump up to about 5% above threshold, sometimes a little higher. I mean, there's variety in the workouts, but typically it's a 95% to 105% back to 95% sort of scenario.
And I don't want to get, you know, too deep. We don't have to get down to the, you know, metabolic level. We're talking about very specific stuff, but there are a lot of things accomplished with over unders. It's teaching your body to process lactate more efficiently. Is that correct?
Yeah. So you're actually teaching your brain to deal with the discomfort of the over unders. And then the physiological adaptation is actually being able to metabolize the excess lactate, to actually put it to use. So it's not so much about achieving high levels of lactate so much as accommodating them. So processing that lactate and keeping the workload high.
Mm, yeah, that's the important thing, because if you think about it in a race, it's so rare that you have an attack that everybody goes, wait, lactate levels are too high.
Yeah,
we need to calm down for a while. Like, you know, if you're in a criterium, it's going to attack after attack after attack. Counterattacks fly, right? And in a mountain bike race, since the terrain is always fluctuating, whether you like it or not, you're going to have to recover, and I'm doing air quotes here, recover while you are not riding at a recovery pace. It's just how it works. So really beneficial and hard work.
And even for those, if you're like a triathlete or something, that over-unders will help bump up your FTP. So even if you're not doing that kind of racing, you're like, oh, I'm an Ironman athlete or I'm a half Ironman athlete or an Olympic athlete, why should I be doing that? Especially if you're an Olympic athlete, over-unders can really bump up your FTP,
yeah.
Your hour of, you know, how much power you can hold out for an hour, so that during race day you could put out more power.
That's a big misnomer that I see with a lot of people that come in like steady state, long course triathletes.
Yeah, why do I need a VO2 max?
Yeah, yeah. Why would I ever do intense work? I just do zone 2 stuff because that's what I'm going to do on race day. But you need to focus on raising that threshold. You need to focus on the other stuff too. And also, in a perfect world, maybe something like Ironman, you know, something in Florida or something like that, it's pan flat. But even then, you're going to have gusts of wind that are going to throw you off.
Still want the highest sustainable power you can manage.
Yeah, just a
and
higher.
You still want to ride high. Yeah,
yeah, you're not going to spike it all still in Florida, even with gusts. You still want as flat as possible, mm-hmm. with a slight negative split. But yeah, just highest sustainable power. And having a higher VO2 max will raise your aerobic power, too. Having a higher FTP will raise your aerobic power.
Yeah, yeah, it all works. Jens, and for the guy that asked if we make up this Jens guy, nope, it's another Jens.
Everyone's just going to start submitting with Jens.
Yeah.
35 questions from Jens.
Yeah. He says, I know it's individual, but have you got some great music tunes to work out to?
Yeah, Chad, so I think we all have input on this. I'll start by saying when I led my indoor classes, I think I made more lasting friendships discussing the music that I soundtracked those classes, used to soundtrack those classes, more so than the classes themselves.
Should be a DJ.
Yeah, honestly,
this coaching thing.
And part of my motivation for getting into those classes was the fact that I could, in fact, be the DJ for each of these hour-long or 90-minute-long classes. So it was a huge motivator, and I still am quite passionate about it. So Yeah, I've literally got like this ever-growing list. It's somewhere in the ballpark of like 500 songs. So when I find a good song, one that motivates me, and it can be different, you know, that sometimes I need something really aggressive. Sometimes I need like a steady beat where I can almost kind of detach from what's going on and just focus more on the music than the effort. And then sometimes it's just songs that, you know, just kind of wake you up inside, just make you feel like working. And like I said, this list grows and grows. I could literally give you guys 20 or 30 songs every week, and I'd be willing to bet that the majority of them would make you want to ride your bike. So on that note,
do tell.
I'm just going to. I'm just going to.
My interest.
You've teased.
I'm just going to vomit about, I don't know, 15, 20 songs. I'm going to go pretty rapid fire, but this is a podcast, so you guys can pause and reflect as much as you'd like. So The Weeknd, Can't Feel My Face. Love that. The Kills. Three songs in particular, and they're all off the album Blood Pressures. It's You Don't Own the Road, Future Starts Slow, and Nail in My Coffin. All very solid. Their new one, Ash and Ice, I can listen to that whole album. There's a couple slow songs on there that I might skip, but whole album solid. A band called Modern Space. The song is Rule Britannia. Just a great little ditty. Into Lala is a new band. It's Into LALA, Lala. I can listen to that whole album. Same goes for Grimes' new one, Art Angels. Every song on there, but especially Flesh Without Blood and Belly of the Beat. TV on the Radio, Wolf Like Me is an all-time favorite, but the album Seeds is one I can listen to the entire album. I'm a sucker for Crystal Method. Sons, spelled with two U's, has a song called Instrument, which if you've got a pretty good system, really, really deep low end, that song will amaze you. And then here's just a handful of remixes. A band called Black Gold, song's Detroit, and it's the Shark Attack Beach Party Remix. Monarchy, The Phoenix Alive, is the Chris Menace remix. Pussifer, Conditions of My Parole, Sir Mix-a-Lot, Fubar Mix. And they also have a great song called Mama Said, or He Does, whatever. And then this is a bit embarrassing, but Becky G from the Hotel Transylvania soundtrack has a song called Problem, and it's the Monster remix with Will.i.am. Don't care how many times I listen to that song, always makes me want to work. And on that note, Meghan Trainor's All About That Bass, equally embarrassing, but man, that song, it does it for me. What can I say?
Chad's that guy who goes, I liked them before they were cool.
And then Glass Animals.
There's more, everyone.
Glass Animals, song called Pools. It's the Roosevelt remix. Imagine Dragons, got a song called Friction. It works really, that's an aggressive one, but man, does it work. Joywave, the song Tongues and Destruction, and basically that whole album, How Do You Feel, works. Mute Mask got a song called Stratosphere, which is mellow, but that just works. And then the last two on more of the hip-hop tip is The Roots, Seed 2.0. Old song, doesn't matter how many times I hear it, always makes me want to ride my bike. Same goes for Sergio Mendez, Yes, Yes, Y'all, which has got like Black Thought from Roots. Charlie Tuna's in there, Will.i.am's in there again. Solid, solid song. And that's it for me.
We just lost about a few thousand people from the podcast. Everyone wake up. But we know what we should do with your blog post, Chad. And what we should do is have you on Spotify create public playlists.
I'd love to.
And people can just follow those and we can link them in a blog post.
Yeah. If this is at all interesting and people dig this sort of thing, I'm definitely willing to put the time
into
it.
Let us know on Snapchat or something if you want us to do that. But if you do, we'll put it on a sprint. It'll come out in a few weeks. Sprint means is how we work and we'll document everything Chad just said.
Yeah, and I think that probably more people are interested than we think. And I bet people are rewinding, writing things down, searching things like
that. Well, I have my top 100 songs now, so let me start.
Go ahead, Nate.
Just kidding. I don't listen to any music when I work out. I like watching TV shows and movies. Mr. Robot, just got into that. That's kind of a new show.
I've heard that. People are loving it.
Yep. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you can, if you have Amazon Prime, the first season, you can watch on Amazon Video for free.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah. Britney Spears. I'm joking. No, that's not. But I'm much like Chad. I have to have music. I can't be watching anything. Sometimes I'll put on a cross country race in the background or something, but I still have music going. So I have a few different playlists. So one thing, the Chainsmokers, they're a DJ pair out of New York and they do something called Nice Hair Radio. And that comes out every month, I think they do one, or maybe even more frequently. But you can subscribe on SoundCloud to that and listen to it there. It's their live sets. Well, they're remastered and remixed, but they're very good. In almost every case, they're a solid listen. They're an hour long, coincides with almost all of our workouts. It's really good. There's hardly any talk on it. It's all just music, which is great. So that's one thing I would recommend, anything they do. And then on Spotify, I have a pre-race playlist that I listen to when I do warm-ups, and it lasts exactly the same length as my warm-up. And so, and I'll just run through a few, because that one's not that long.
Oh, geez.
I'll just run through a few. It's not too long. Sorry, Nate.
You guys can skip ahead in your podcast.
So first one is, the song is called Raining, and it's the Dance Love edit, and it's Cascade and Adam K. Really, really good song. And these whole things, the order actually, it starts out good, and then
you don't need to describe it. Just
it's good.
Just get through it.
Let's sing it, John.
Three Lao, How You Love Me. That's a good song. Strange Talk, Young Hearts is the song. It's the Chainsmokers remix by Strange Talk. London Grammar does a song called Hey Now, and the Artie remix is very good. ASTR and Adam Palin, there's a song called Operate, and it's the Chainsmokers remix again, and it's awesome. Once again, the Chainsmokers, their song The Rookie, that one has an extremely like heavy beat. It's really good.
Don't need to describe it.
We're just going to keep going and put Nathan. Nate's genuinely cringing right now.
Answer. There's so many great questions. So
we'll get to them. All These Roads by Sultan and Shepherd, Pressure, the Alesso remix, and then Lost and Found by Sick Individuals. That one is like 30 minutes long, coincides with almost all of our pre-race warm-ups. That's a really good one. So
what have you done, Jens?
Hey, there you go. Never ask a question about music again.
I think it's good. I think that Nate's cringing. I think
we
could have
just said, you know what? We'll put up a blog post with our favorites. Next
people
question.
People are getting stuff right now. They're excited. They're excited. So the next two questions are kind of related. It's from Dylan is the first one. He says, I keep mentally and physically failing after my first 8-minute test, and I bail on the second. Is that okay? Does the number still stand? And then Todd follows up and he says, I'm undecided whether an FTP test that goes badly is more painful during or after the experience. So, Chad.
Dylan, really you just need one 8-minute test for us to get some bearing on what your functional threshold power is. You know, that'll bear out over the course of your workouts and you'll be able to decide, you know, maybe you undershot it and maybe that 8 minutes wasn't as hard as you could have gone. Fact that you can't do another one tells me you probably are burying yourself. So it's workable. I'd be willing to bet it's something you can use and your workouts will scale really nicely because of it. The fact that you're not getting a second one says your fitness, your endurance especially, is lacking. Whether that's a psychological thing or a physical one, I don't know. But with a 10-minute break between 2 8-minute efforts, you should be able to go again. Maybe you can't hit the same high mark, but you should be able to at least push yourself pretty hard for another 8-minute effort. The fact that you can't, well, you got to consider, you know, what does that mean to your training? I can't think of too many interval workouts that are a single interval, one and done. So you have to be able to rally and power through another effort or several.
Yeah, I would say that even though you'll get the number, you want to be able to accomplish that workout.
And training is testing, testing is training, right? So you're basically kind of missing out on an opportunity to train hard that day if you're only doing a single 8-minute effort.
So let's say you do fail and you are feeling, as Todd mentions, pretty bad about it. We've seen a lot of people go back and try it the next day or take different approaches to it. What should you do what do you guys do if you fail?
I don't know if I've really ever failed a test, but I have done tests back to back, and I usually give myself one extra day of rest depending on how I feel. Doing back to back, I don't think would help. I have a FTP test scheduled for Tuesday, and I'm like, I don't think I really want to do the test. I'm pretty tired right now. I'm at a bachelor party last weekend, and then I got a new mountain bike. So I'm like, this is supposed to be my recovery week, but I raced last night, and I kind of did a good workout Tuesday. I want to ride for a long time all this weekend. So I was thinking about just bumping up to where I think my FTP should be. And then as I do my workouts, tweaking into where it is.
And this is actually a viable approach if you're a longtime trainer. If you've been doing this for a while and you have a good sense of what your capabilities are, and what workouts should feel like, you can get away with doing exactly what Nate's done. And I'm not saying that because that's the way I do it. It is the way I do it, but it's because I've logged a lot of miles on the trainer, done a lot of intervals workouts. So the more experienced indoor athletes, or athletes, period, endurance athletes, they get a greater or a more and more improved sense of where their capabilities lie, to the point where I won't say FTP tests are unnecessary, but if in the event you want to skip one here and there or postpone it, maybe you can certainly get away with that and not derail your training.
And we've talked about this before, but there's a, if you Google the seven deadly sins of cycling, you can see the seven top ways to measure your FTP. And the intervals you can repeatedly do in training is one of the ways.
Yes. Key indicator.
Yeah. And that too, if you do bad on a test. So if you do bad on a test, you're like, oh, I think it could be higher. And then you get into some of your workouts and you're like, these are kind of too easy. Chad, right? You back me up here. Bump your FTP up 5 watts and keep going.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe a percentage. You know, if you're someone with 150 watt FTP, a 5 watt bump is more substantial than someone with a 300 watt FTP. So maybe just a couple percentage points, but elevate it a little, see how things go from there.
And that's also the one thing we should clarify too. And once again, I'll just reiterate what you said. It takes time and experience to understand these type of things and to know that you are making that type of progress. So, and also a rider that is experienced and that is used to testing and can take away or can have these takeaways from these key indicators, it doesn't mean that they won't benefit from an FTP test. You still very much will.
Yeah, so, and there you'll have days too where you're simply not ready to assess FTP. You know, maybe psychologically you haven't got it together. Maybe you're like Nate, you're just a little too tired and you know it's not going to be representative of what you can do. I'm going to save it for another day. That's absolutely advisable. And you might even get into the workout. Say, you know, you're just going to harden up. I'm just going to do this. I think once I get going, I'll feel better. That may not come. So, you know, doing a 20-minute test, you're 5 or 6 minutes into it, still feeling terrible, cut it off. Do something else that day. Come back when you feel up to it. You don't have to be completely refreshed after a recovery week and totally ready to rip it, but you do have to be capable of showing how powerful, you know, how fit you are.
Last time I went through, you know, the whole with the sweet spot base 1 and 2 and then did my test. I followed the plan perfectly. And that I had the feeling, or during the recovery week, I was like, oh, I feel so bad. And in the end, I was like, I'm ready to rip the legs off this test.
Yeah.
And I did. And I had what, like 45 watt increase or something. And that's really good. Right. So one thing I can say too, if you choose your own FTP, you can use the intensity factor and kind of your RPE to figure out RPE, like your perceived effort, how hard that test is. So this is for workouts of an hour. So IF, it says in Trainer Road, IF or intensity factor. If your IF of the workout is like 0.85, that's like a solid workout. But afterwards you're like, okay, I worked out. I felt it. That's good. If it's 0.9, 0.92, that's a pretty hard workout.
You should feel.
Sorry. Yeah, then it feels really hard. But 0.95 is like 0.95 and above up to 1. If you have any fatigue doing something that's 1 is really hard. But 0.59 and above, it should
0.95,
be. 0.95, yeah. Yeah, 0.95 and above should be extremely hard. And you should still be able to get through your intervals. But by the end of it, you want to like, you're like, that was one of the hardest things I've done. And if you have an FTP set and you go through a 0.95 and you can't finish it, or no, sorry, now you can't finish it. You go through a 0.95 and it seems easy, your FTP is too low. Conversely, if you go through a 0.85 and you're like, oh, I barely held on. I could just barely finish that workout. You're either fatigued and you need to take a little bit of rest, or you're, could be a mental thing too if you're new. There's so many ifs, right? But if you're doing what I'm experiencing and you're trying to set your own FTP, you could have set it too high if you're rested and 0.85 is too hard.
Right.
Yeah. That's nothing more to add. That's perfect.
Yeah. And one thing that I'll add to this too is the boost that you can get from a good FTP test. Like the mental boost from that is huge.
Yeah. You stand up straighter.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. And here's the deal. If you have been following your training as prescribed, you've been doing everything you should, you've been resting appropriately, everything else, your FTP should go up. Or if you're at the spear of your potential, so to speak, you're at the tip of the spear, you shouldn't see it drop. You shouldn't. Granted, there may be a bad day, but take confidence in the work that you've done and trust in that. And if you can, take that test and give yourself that boost in confidence, because that is hugely valuable.
He brings up another point I'd like to expand on a bit, and that's if your FTP does fall in an FTP assessment, doesn't mean you drop your FTP. The only way you would drop your FTP is if your FTP or if your workouts have been going from bad to worse, and that probably just means you need to rest. Doesn't mean you're actually losing fitness, just means you need to kind of revitalize. you're seldom, if ever, going to reduce your FTP unless you see it coming. It's not going to be some big surprise. You're not going to have one bad day and be like, oh, got to drop my FTP. Right. It's going to be a gradual decline into something that says, I need a bunch of rest, or I overshot my FTP.
Or if you took a lot of time off, you would,
exactly,
you know, that type of a thing.
Yeah, it won't be a surprise. It won't be a single bad day. It won't be a single bad assessment.
Yeah, that would suck to wake up.
Yeah. Well, I took, 2 years off, and I went from like 310 to 180.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not kidding.
But you saw that coming, you know,
no, I saw
miles away.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was, to be fair, I think it was 189. Not 180. But that, it hurt. And you know what, too? The test at 189 was just as hard as 310.
Exactly.
Which is,
yeah,
crazy,
that's the,
right?
Crazy thing.
It hurt just as bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that... I know they credit LeMond with saying that, and I don't know if he originally was, but the saying of it never gets easier, you just get faster, and that's the truth, even with FTP tests.
I think it gets harder, frankly. You learn how to push yourself to those so-called boundaries, and it gets tougher.
Chad, take a couple years off when you know how to push yourself, but there's nothing there for your body to do.
No.
That had to have been pretty humbling, too. Like, coming, like, not maybe frustrating more than humbling. I'm not sure. But
I knew I was going to get a pump quickly, and I was like, okay. I was okay with it because...
You were motivated,
okay,
I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was okay with it. I knew.
So that's another thing, too. If you're the type of person that could be motivated by... Because I know a lot of people, when they come back from injury or an extended time away, they might not want to take an FTP test because it's a blow to the ego. But... if you can be motivated by the fact, like, look, all right, here's where I am. And then just think, after you do get to where you should be, that'll be really cool to say, like Nate just said, I was at 189, and now, where are you at now, Nate?
It's going to be self-adjusted, but I think I'm going to put it at 285.
Yeah.
So
that's
not there,
huge, though.
Maybe 290. Maybe,
but
295.
The experienced athlete knows that he or she's going to see a big jump from that number.
Yep.
So they know what their capabilities are. They know they're well below them. They know they can get back there.
Although, too, after those 2 years, I don't know exactly how long it was, but I went to, I tried to self-assess or, you know, put my FTP in. I think I put in at like 220.
Yeah.
And I did some workouts. I'm like, no, it's not 220. Like, no way could it be lower. And then I just retested, and then I knew. And
yeah,
the workouts were geared,
yeah,
for
so
me.
So after
4 weeks, though, I bumped up a lot.
After a hiatus like that, there's no guessing. You have to do an assessment. You
totally
can't just kind of, oh, I think I'm probably here, because that's quite a crapshoot.
Yeah, exactly. And when you start out with sweet spot base, by the way, a lot of the workouts are, you know, that they're sweet spot workouts. And if those feel a lot like threshold, or maybe even harder,
they might, though, when you're new.
You know?
Those, like,
yeah, if you're new, good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're new, like, don't worry about it. Do your FTP test. This is only if you are self-assessing your FTP, I would say. Then pay attention to the, you know, if it's too hard or too easy.
Right, I'd agree. James, he says, should I retest before an A event to get an accurate FTP to pace against? He says the specialty plans, and perhaps the specialty plan he's doing, doesn't include it.
Yeah, a lot of the specialty plans don't include assessment, and that's because the workouts scale based on the existing FTP. So if you were to take a hard workout, and so you start with a pretty hard workout on your first Tuesday, the next Tuesday gets a little harder, the next Tuesday a little harder. If you're also up adjusting FTP, those workouts are going to get perhaps too hard. So I kind of account for the fact that you're not adjusting FTP by instead scaling the workouts upwards. So they get more demanding based on your current FTP. And really, during the specialty phase, we're not necessarily looking for further improvements in FTP. Rather, we're looking to improve very specific things at that point. Maybe your 2-minute power, 5-minute power, ability to repeat efforts. The emphasis shifts a little away from increasing FTP. It's not to say you can, you know, if for whatever reason, maybe on that fifth week, you feel there's a change, and for some reason, or you know, you want to note it and have your workout scale to that new number. You can always swap out a workout and do it. It may not be the same workout, and it may, you know, shift things a little bit. That's not a big deal. You can do it. I just don't think it's necessary. And if you haven't by then gotten an idea of what sort of pacing you need to do relative to that current FTP, you should probably do a little more trial and error.
Have you ever done that, Nate, before? Most of my races don't have like a full pacing plan, because almost all of them are very codependent,
yeah,
on other racers.
But like for a triathlon, right, where you're trying to decide on that intensity factor or your normalized goal, normalized power, whatever, so that you know you're not going to sabotage your run, I fully understand wanting to nail that down. But again, you don't necessarily need to assess a new or estimate a new FTP.
Now, what I do is, so if it's a half Ironman, instead of doing like a long endurance ride, I swap it out for a kind of a race simulation where if I know I'm going to hold 220 for 2 hours and 30 minutes, I do it for 220 for 2 hours and 30 minutes, and then I know I can hold it. And in a half Ironman in training, that should be, it should be hard, but I feel okay afterwards. Then maybe the next week, I might even bump that up 5 watts because I'm training very something very specific to hold that for a long time. And that might not correlate exactly against my FTP.
And that's the trial and error I'm talking about. Week to week, you actually get a feel for what's real, not what the metrics are telling you, not what you feel you should do, not what your estimated FTP leads you to believe, but what you actually can do.
And when you to get that number, Nate, just your starting point, right? You refine it over time, like you said, you might pick it up. But that starting point, do you just base it off of IF? Or?
Yeah, I did 0.8. percent, so 80% of my FTP. That's where I'd kind of start for a half, and then I try to work it up to 85% of FTP. But just, I actually was telling Brandon Need here, who's a pro triathlete, and he was racing against Andy Potts and Craig Alexander.
He got 11th
and did 11th well,
or 10th. Yeah, 11th. Against like, I think Ben Hoffman was there too. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
super fast.
His bike is his limiter right now, and I suggested that is doing 2 hours and 30. He's not doing 230, but 230 wouldn't be bad for him. Starting at 1 wattage of, he can do it 85% right now, and he can probably bump that up to 90 and just keep adding a few extra percentage, maybe 1 or 2% every weekend and until he can race faster.
The trainer is so key for that too. I mean, oh, where else are you going to be able to do that? It's so rough.
I've done my best bike splits. I think I got, someone told me this, I don't know if it's true, but I was like 16th, including women pros, not men pros, at... what was it? New Orleans, I think, once. And that's where I did, that's all I did for all my long workouts was on the trainer, just trying to simulate race. It was like, you know, specialty phase stuff. Like, what am I doing in the race? I'm just going to simulate that and bump it up a little bit every single time. That was before, that was pre-trainer road days, pre-baby days, pre-wife days. Actually, one of the lap, Jonathan and I raced last night and I yelled to your wife because you had lapped me going about 45 miles per hour on the single track. And I yelled to your wife, you had your baby there, that you the dad slowness has not hit you yet. You need to hold Simon more. What are you doing?
I felt terrible.
You're not
last
helping
night.
Out enough.
Oh, I felt like it's funny. So it was 6 laps and it's intense because the downhill is intense enough that you're not recovering fully. And then the up is it's an up and it's hard. And it's 6 laps. Pretty short laps, painful stuff. And usually around the 3rd lap or 4th lap, I'll be thinking, what do I need? I need water. I need sugar or something like that. And all I could think of from lap 2 on was, I just need sleep. I just want to sleep. That's all I could think of. So.
And you said you were thinking about how hard this course was for Nate. You're like, oh, that
downhill. Yeah, that's true. I was going through all these little technical features, and I was like, Nate probably needs help on this feature.
So, suffice it to say, Jonathan was not terribly focused.
No.
And, well,
no,
Jonathan did not. Another mechanic mistake. Can you describe that so other people can learn
from
it?
Yeah, so I needed to replace my brake pads for a while now. I wasn't down to the metal. I would never let that happen, but they were to the point where I have the SRAM guide brakes and they have these cool little dials where you can adjust the pad contact. And pretty much all that means is that it will make it so that you have to pull your lever in less to make the brakes work, right? In layman's terms. So I had those dialed all the way out because I like my brakes to be very immediate. Like not as in like lock up, but like as soon as I move my fingers, there's something there. And I was squishing almost to the grip. So I decided to replace my brake pads the day before a race. Step number one, not a great idea because they're hydraulic. So that's not just like you're switching out rim brake pads, right? So I switched those out. And then a good mechanic does a rebleed when you do that because you need to do that. Your brakes need to be rebled to adjust to the new volume and everything else that you need. So I did that because I'm a good and I'm doing air mechanics mechanic, but I'm not a great mechanic because a great mechanic would have cycled the actual pistons of the brake and reset everything and then put the pads in and done a rebleed. And if that's the case, I wouldn't have had brake rub. Yesterday during the whole race, my wheels were, I was surprised afterwards. I just thought I felt really slow, which for circumstances in my life makes sense, but it was dragging a lot.
You know, he showed me, and he goes to, after the race, to spin his wheel. You know, sometimes you spin the wheel, and you hear, like, it's like, rub, 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 rub. He spun the wheel, and it was like a half a second, and it stopped. It just stopped.
Yeah.
And who won the race, though?
I did.
Yeah, you won.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah.
But the moral of the story is don't work on your bike the day before a race or the day of.
Yes. Right. Cause
at least spin the wheels once.
Yeah. Well, and that was me like seriously getting the bleed done, taking it off the stand, putting it on the bike rack. Right. So just not smart. Should have spent more time and given myself more time.
You're probably a little busy.
Yeah, I am. But so yeah, that's, I don't know how we got onto that topic, but word to the wise, don't be me. James has a follow-up question. He says, Chad said, and he says in quotes, junk miles aren't to be confused with tempo work. Can you go into more detail on the podcast? And we've gone into a lot of detail on this before, especially around the time when everyone was doing base training.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. So junk mileage implies there isn't purpose behind what you're doing. Tempo work, if it's a prescribed tempo workout, there's a lot of benefit to tempo training, and the workout is structured to reap that benefit. The junk miles come into play, like I said, when it's purposeless or you're just riding for the sake of riding, trying to inflate TSS, but you don't really need that inflation. Basically, it's the whole riding too hard to be considered recovery, riding too easy to be considered enough stress to foster adaptation, right? It's neither here nor there. It's kind of in that gray area where you're not getting much out of it, and it too often comes at the expense of workouts that could be productive, hence junk.
And there's also something when people vacillate between the two, like you said, without any form or structure in their ride. So a lot of people that I know, they put on Strava and they have that going on, or they have like segment alerts, which is like the worst thing you can do for your training, but they have that going on in their Garmin. And what they do is they go hard for a segment, and whether they end up doing that or not, they go hard for a segment. Then after that, they're exhausted. So they might say that they're riding in tempo, but really they're cruising in endurance or below. And then they just kind of peak and valley, but it's not structured. And that's one thing, like with structured, like intense work, limiting those rests and keeping the rest structured.
Or lengthening them. I mean, there's structure and purpose behind their design. So junk just means junk can include intensity. Junk is basically just something that's not really furthering any sort of goals or objectives.
Yeah, I have a confession to make. I've felt this for a while, but I feel like my outdoor mountain biking is kind of junk training when compared to, like, I'm just thinking on Sunday, I could either go outside and mountain bike, which sounds really fun, or I could do my 5x20 sweet spot, which I'll really gain some stuff. I'm going to do mountain biking just because right now the limiter of my race is downhill. But I'm just like you said, I'm thinking about maybe trying to go to the downhill North Star and actually practice downhill, because then it wouldn't be really junk, because the purpose of that is totally improving my limiter so that it's not.
And I'm still not
anymore.
Entirely sure it's junk in that case. I mean, in terms of conditioning, yeah, it might be junk in that you're not getting a whole lot of training benefit out of it. But if you're working on your skills and that is in fact a limiter, I wouldn't consider
that's
that
the
junk.
Reason why I'm doing it is the skills. But like when I do a triathlon, I don't need to, like, I never need to write a course as a triathlon. Like, I can get on my TT bars and just go. Yeah. It's like, go that way.
Yeah.
And it's fine.
Just make sure you know where to go in and out of transition and you're good.
Yeah. And those, I do take it outside. One, actually, Jonathan, before a race, I check my equipment. I go, I'm the guy, I put in, like, I have a zip disc in front and aero. I do everything like I'm going to do during the race. We just talked about it. I don't really care what people think of me as I'm running. I get a lot of looks, but I go really fast too. But who cares, right? Because I want to make sure that, okay, my helmet is going to be right. Because I spend so much time and money, and a lot of times you fly somewhere. Why not keep your aero helmet on? The guys who don't train on their aero helmets ever, that seems silly because they weigh differently. It's going to hurt your neck. But
totally.
Before the race, I'll practice outside. And because sometimes my aero bars will feel a bit different, like my neck, the position, because I'm actually looking farther down. But other than that, for TT, I am doing majority of my work inside, especially for a triathlon because of the trainer. There's no downhills and no stop signs.
So we talked about like polarized training before. This is a totally different usage of the word polarized. I want to be clear on that. But the more polarized for mountain bikers or cyclocross racers or even road racers, everybody, if you can really get like objective and strict with your training and say, I am doing my work on the trainer and I am going to get the best quality work. And then when I'm not on the trainer, I'm going to have a purpose aside from interval work that is going to be fulfilled. If you're a road racer, go to the local spot where you do crits, as long as it's a safe course, and work on turns or work with your friends on tactics or work with, you know, if you're a mountain biker, work on your bike skills. Go to a pump track. Even though you'll be hanging out with a bunch of kids, you're going to be doing something to make yourself faster, right? Like, because that's one of the things with mountain biking is the way to build bike skills is to play around on a bike and to have fun.
Oh, yeah.
And as an adult, we feel guilty about that, right? Because we don't want to just
look at Peter Sagan. That guy plays all the time, and he's so good because of it. He's relaxed and fluid and has fun with it.
This is that part where, like, if I were to coach myself, I would tell myself, Nate, on your days that you're going outside, go to North Star and do the downhill, you know, get a coach and do that. And then on the other weekend day, go to the pump track. Everything else indoor, work on your fitness, but those are your limiters. You don't need to work on going uphill mountain biking because you can handle that fine.
Yep.
Just going the downhills.
Yep.
But I don't know why I don't do that. Like,
well, and
I should. It's logic versus emotion.
Just to apply an anecdote to that, yesterday there's one spot on the course that's it's after the water tower, so Nate knows where that is, but none of you guys do. So basically it's just a narrow little winding single track that's not that tough. But that every single time I'm there at that race, that's where I can pull a lot of time on people. And it comes in the first start straight because I pump through certain features and pick up over certain things. I have my little secret lines through that section, and they allow me to save watts through that section. And I can put out the same amount of power, but I can carry way more speed.
I actually thought of you because of this, and let's make it general so people can get something out of it. But after the water tower, you go from... it's a change from asphalt into a little less than 90 degree or a little more than 90 degree turn. And there's a big root right there. And is that one of the spots you're talking about?
Yep.
So how do you, if you're going really hard against something where there's a little, I know it's maybe about like half a curb.
Yeah.
The height of it.
It's like a curb and a turn. Half.
It's a curb and a half.
It's pretty high.
Okay. And it's on a turn. Cause I know I would slow down on that and kind of pick my front wheel up and go over, but I was thinking, actually, while I was racing, I wonder how Jonathan does this.
Yeah.
How do you take something like that?
Yeah, so if there's a feature like that, and as long as, in this case, there's a berm of sorts, it just kind of digs into the hill.
You go over the side?
So, yeah.
Oh,
so
I didn't even think of that.
You ride high on the side, and you get as much speed as you can into something like that. If you ever see a section that's got something technical that you have to step up or anything else, in most cases, speed is going to be your friend. So in that case, coming into that, I look not at the trail, but I look to the sides of the trail to see if I'm carrying a lot of speed into a turn, to see how I can go to the sides of the trail without cheating or cutting.
So you don't even hit that route.
Nope.
You just go on the side.
I go on the side, and there's a rock and a bush that you have to be careful to hit. So I pump before that, and when I pump, I get kind of this rebound off of that, and it clears me over the rock and route. So
he's at such a different level than me.
So, but that's the thing that if you're a mountain biker or a cyclocross racer or anything, those little things like on a criterium course, you start to recognize that course and you start to understand that, hey, when it's not a race situation, I can see this course with more clarity and I can actually pedal through this turn. I don't have to coast, or I can carry more momentum, or this line's really good because I missed the steep part of this dip, or whatever it is. If you can nail down those small little things, they can give you big advantages on race day.
I have my new Yeti too, with full suspension, so I'm not racing the fat bike anymore. And it was I did four loops for my category. And I was telling the guys earlier, there was a pretty gnarly rock garden. My first time through it was the best because I didn't know it was coming.
Yeah.
And I just blew through it. And then the next times I knew it was coming and I went slow and I tried to like maneuver.
Yeah.
And that was really hard. And I was doing like the, where as you ride, you go, like you kind of grunt like you're going to fall.
Yeah.
But if I could have just gone over the top. My brain isn't there yet, but hopefully it'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah. So... yes. Keep
your, just go faster.
Keep structure, and then otherwise be working on other aspects. But
and that's not to say you can't have the occasional unstructured workout. Nothing wrong with that.
True.
Just again,
you can enjoy yourself sometimes.
Yeah, true, yeah.
No enjoyment. No enjoyment.
Always faster.
We're all going to Rio.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Jason. He says, "I want to start to race this year or next, but I'm concerned that my kick." And he says, "My kick is weak." What he's talking about, his kick, Chad. What's he saying?
Either his finishing kick, or maybe just his snap. But either way, is a more reactive power, where he has to generate a lot of watts really quickly for a short period of time.
So, and he's worried about that being weak when he needs to attack or close down an attack. He says at 1 minute, he's about 7.5 watts per kilogram, and it gets worse on shorter efforts. It's not terrible.
It's not terrible, but it's all relative to who he's racing, you know, what he has to cover.
Good point. He says, I'm 40 this year, and whilst I accept the longer efforts, will always fit a rider of my age better. Is there a way to be competitive in the shorter, more intense stuff, considering my age and ability to build strength? Thanks, Jason. And he also notes he wished they'd increase their character limit on Twitter, because that was like four tweets put together.
Wait, one question before this. So 1 minute, I just put that in. For me, that would be 630 watts, which I think is a lot for a minute. Yeah. And I wouldn't consider a kick to be 1 minute.
No. That's another thing I was going to discuss. Yeah. So Jason, the difference between a kick and a 1 minute effort, as Nate just pointed out, is in our opinion, or by our definition, pretty vast. So if you're looking to increase 1 minute power, it's going to be different than going about looking to increase your snap. So I'll address both. 1 minute power is basically doing 1 minute efforts. I mean, you have to do these anaerobic efforts and put a lot of recovery between them. A lot of the workouts, especially as they build toward a race, aren't really built like that. Those are the earlier, sometimes you'll see them in base, but typically you'll see them in build, where you do short but very high power, lots of rest in between so that you can fully recuperate and basically repeat that effort at the same high quality every time. But then as we move into the specialty phase, we're more concerned with being able to repeat those efforts with minimal recovery. So we're less focused on the power, more concerned with the repeatability. So that's how you'd address that shorter power, and there are lots of workouts to do it. Just plug anaerobic or do the select the anaerobic checkbox on the workouts page. But it's, you know, short 30-second up to maybe 90-second type of efforts. If you're looking to improve snap, it's a whole different ball game, and that's your little 6-second, 12-second, maybe 15-second, even 20-second efforts where it's all out. And again, lots of recovery in between so that you can recruit a lot of muscle. I mean, basically what you're after there is improved neuromuscular activity. The communication between your brain and your muscles might not be as strong as it could be because you're not accessing those muscles ever. But when you do these short, hard efforts and you're recruiting more fibers, the fibers you're dragging around but they aren't really active, by doing like 200%, 250%, 300% of FTP repeats, very short ones, you start to build those communication lines or wake them back up. And that's going to lend more to snap. A lot of those workouts are best done outside, but you certainly can do some of it indoors.
I'm looking at the power profiling chart. So if you Google power profiling chart, Andrew Coggan made it up, and you can see for your watt per kilogram at a certain time how you compare. And I've always thought this kind of underestimates everyone, but at 7.5, he says that is 7.5 watts per kilograms for 1 minute. Coggan says that's mid cat four. The other thing that's going to be a difference is if you're Jonathan at that on a flat crit versus me at that on a flat crit, I would be strong. I mean, yeah, I'd be stronger than Jonathan because of the weight. Yep, yeah, and 630. How many kilograms are you, Jonathan?
70, I think I am. So let me.
So for Jonathan, that's 525 watts versus me, that's 630. So it'd be 100 more watts, and probably the aerodynamic drag on a flat course wouldn't be different. So if we're on an uphill, completely different story. But that's kind of a cool way to be able to compare yourself of how good you are. He says here, Cat 1 people are for your FTP anywhere between 4.7 to 5.2.
Yeah, the FTP ones have always resonated with me. The shorter power stuff always kind of psychs me out, makes me feel really inadequate.
Same here. Yeah.
I'm glad we can share this moment.
It's a moment of insecurity. It's a bonding moment for all of us. I've noticed the same thing, and I also feel like there's more relativity, like there's more application to more people at the FTP level. Then after that, it gets more individual.
That could be it too, that you these know? Are people who are addressing different types of racing, perhaps. I don't know. But like I said, it's always kind of psyched me out.
Yeah.
I agree. The 5 second, 1 minute, and 5 minute, it seems way too high. Like,
yeah. You know, and one thing, Jason, I'm thinking of one specific guy that he actually uses Trainer Road too, but he's a local athlete, Mike Williams, and he has this ability, Mike, forgive me if I'm overestimating your age, but I assume that you're 50, somewhere around there, and you can tear my legs off plenty of times.
Oh, yeah, that's...
You know, and on short efforts.
Jason, that's another thing. I don't want you to get the impression that you can't build this sort of capability. I mean, you might have a genetic predisposition that says you're never going to be that good at it, but you can absolutely improve it. And your age, 40 years of age, man, there are some fast 40-somethings, even 50-somethings, who still have a ton of snap.
Yeah, and in fact,
it dropped me like a bag of rocks.
At Mountain Bike Nationals, which that's all about, having powerful, your ability to respond quick, that kick that you're talking about. The 40 to 44s this past, the past week there at Mountain Bike National Championships, I think they were the fastest ones out of the Cat 1 non-pros. So there you go. And a local guy won that, Justin Thomas.
Yeah, don't lose hope, Jason. You can definitely cultivate that. You can definitely improve it. How far you can take it, well, that depends on a few things.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I'm 65 kilograms, Nate. I thought I should clarify. So,
even weaker. So that for you would be 487 watts. Yeah. So 487 versus 630 on a flat course, I'd have a huge advantage over you.
This is a good example of that. This chart not applying perfectly because I'm over that for my 1 minute power. So, yeah.
Well, that's because too you have a higher watt per kilo mm-hmm. than me. That's probably around what I'm at too, but
right.
your watt per kilo is way higher.
Yeah. All right. So I hope I'm saying this name right, but Ruari, I hope that's how you say it. I apologize if I butchered that one. Is it common for FTP to decrease during the Criterium specialty plan that you guys have? I'm guessing this is happening because the efforts in my case are much shorter during this training plan.
Excuse me. No, it's not. If your FTP is decreasing, something's up. You're probably a little overreached. Recovery is insufficient. Something's not quite jibing as intended. The composition of that training plan, I look at the low volume one just to see what the intense workouts are like. There's definitely a shift towards anaerobic power, repeatable anaerobic power. Not big rests, but big efforts, short ones, do it again and again and again. There's also a whole lot of aerobic capacity work in there, which should keep you from seeing an obvious decrease in your FTP. There aren't any long sustained efforts exactly because this is a very race specific plan, at least the low volume one. There might be some in the mid and high volume, but even then there's nothing that should cause an FTP decline. So my guess is it's probably just you're just a little too overreached, trying to do a little too much, perhaps racing in addition to training too much. I don't know.
I was thinking that too. And I know, I was like, how does he know that his FTP decreased during this?
Yeah.
Could it be that the workouts he's having? So in this, I see a few things. One's you go into the Criterium plan and it's anaerobic and maybe he's not good at anaerobic and they're hard to do. And he goes, oh, my FTP went down because he's having problems mm-hmm. doing this anaerobic yeah. stuff, which is a little bit different than a build.
And for some people, it's just always going to be hard.
Yeah. Like for me, it's easy and the other stuff's hard, but for some people, it's really hard. Especially if you're older, it could be harder. Also, if he did, let's say he did base build and he comes into the Criterium, what Chad said is he could be tired. So as he gets through this plan, so as you're going through the plan, workouts are getting harder and harder and you're not going to be able to finish them. Chad, would that be a sign to take a little bit of time off?
A little bit of time off or dial the intensity of the workouts down a little bit?
Yeah, that might. Yeah, probably that's your first resort.
It could be just a small decrease in the workout intensity actually gets you through. I mean, you might just be overshooting these just a little bit. They're just a little too hard for you to repeat them. That's one thing. Also, I don't know how old you are, but if you're an older athlete, these highly intense workouts take a greater physiologic toll on you. So the whole hormonal response. I mean, there are certain things you're not going to bounce back quite as easy. So a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday scheme might not be great. They might have to shift to maybe a Monday, Thursday, Saturday, something. But feel free to flip things around so that the quality of the workouts rises. So you're probably right, Nate. He's probably judging this based on the fact that he's not completing the workouts as prescribed. Tweak the workouts a bit or extend your recovery a bit. Or even when there are many intervals densely packed, skip the occasional interval. Get back in there, give yourself a little extra recovery so you can bring that interval quality back up.
Yeah, so should he do, because I want to be consistent on the podcast, should he skip parts of the interval or dial it down? Because before we've talked about changing the aspect of the workout.
Yeah, let's prioritize them. Like what you would do first and then if that doesn't work.
Personally, what I would do is I would try to do it mm-hmm. for anaerobic and then take extra rest and skip an interval.
Yeah.
Because I want to get that anaerobic work.
So with the anaerobic work, we're very focused on time at intensity. It's not to say you can't drop the intensity a little bit, but a little bit is the key term here. You can't drop it that far before you fall off into
how much percent
different territory. When you do,
three?
It's hard to say. I mean, if there are 150% repeats versus 130% repeats, I can't say I'd ever recommend dropping more than 5%. I mean, I'm just talking about a small decrease because maybe you're a little flat that day. Maybe this is just a little out of your reach. So yeah, let's just say 5%. Beyond that, you're trying to maintain the intensity. So maybe you do a little less in terms of volume. If it's like a set of 10 1-minute repeats, maybe you do three, skip one, do three, skip one, and then do a couple, however that irons out. But you're looking for at a particular level or a particular work level, a particular intensity. So if you do just a little less work, but you're maintaining that intensity, you're still very much on track with what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I think a lot of those too, they'll be like 10 intervals in a row and then like a really long rest and 10 intervals in a row and a really long rest and 10 intervals in a really long rest.
And you can...
What I would do in the middle of that, if I knew... So I'd try to go the first one if I had problems. The second one, right in the middle, I would just backpedal or something through the middle one. So it's really, you kind of add an extra minute 30 of rest in the middle.
Exactly.
And that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, and you'll find, let's take that case, 10 1-minute efforts and you skip one of them. That makes it 9 minutes worth of quality. Whereas if you bailed out of several of them 30 seconds early, you're missing 2 or 3 minutes worth of quality. So hang in there for as long as you can. Keep the quality high. Don't hesitate to take a break every now and then. And that might be skipping an entire interval. There's a lot of trial and error when it comes to efforts like these. And I've found so many ways to make like a 2 or 3 minute VO2 max effort where I just know there's no way I'm going to be able to hang in there for 3 minutes, but I'll promise myself one 10 second back pedal. I'll postpone it as far as I can into that interval. And that's just enough of a carrot to get me through. I take that 10 second back pedal, hardly any decline in lactate levels or oxygen uptake, right back in it. I get 2 minutes and 50 seconds of quality out of that. Whereas if I had just hung in there until I was dragging ass, I would lose maybe the final minute of it and barely get 2 minutes of decreasing quality.
You know, there's one other possibility too. He may be identifying his FTP with like something like an 8-minute test or a 20-minute test because that's what he's used before. And if that's the case and you've been doing different work for a while now with a specialty plan, you may see something that it's harder for you to do the sustained work if you've neglected that entirely. But that doesn't mean, once again, that your FTP is going down. That just means your ability to sustain it may be different just because your focus is shifting.
These aren't hard, fast, you should be able to do 135% for 30 seconds and repeat it. Maybe it's 132, maybe it's 138, maybe it's all the way down to 128, whatever. You're still in the realm. As a percentage of your FTP, it doesn't always correlate just right. These are ranges. I put a hard number on it because I have to design these. So 135%. May imply that you have to do this at 135%, but the fact of the matter is maybe you can't, and maybe that's not even enough stress for you.
Yeah, so hopefully that gives you a good answer there. Perhaps your FTP isn't going down, and perhaps
probably
it's
not.
Exactly. Crease, and I'll announce, I hope that's Crease. I hope that's right. Crease09 on Twitter, you say that you mentioned a couple times your morning routines in the podcast. Which exercises or practices do you do in the mornings? Chad, do you want to start off?
Typically, I used to just do my interval workouts in the morning, but I've shifted that with this whole dietary modification that I've been using where I do the depletion ride at night, go to bed, glycogen depleted, get up, do an easy ride. And I haven't even been doing the easy rides. So I don't have much of a early morning routine right now. I used to do my intensity in the morning, but as I've mentioned on previous podcasts, I find that I get more out of my intense workouts when I save them for the afternoon and even the early evening.
Do you do anything other than the training on the bike stuff regarding exercises or anything?
Coffee break weight training. So, going to the coffee room, which is right next to my office, and bang out a set of pull-ups or push-ups or bench press or something along those lines. Highly unstructured, and it's more to just kind of work in some weight training without spending time in a gym. Yeah,
and this isn't like a morning thing. That's just
not really. I'm not the best example right now.
What do you do, Nate?
Yeah, I in the morning, after I take a shower and stuff in the morning, I have a protein shake of Optimum Nutrition, the gold standard. I have like 50 grams in that. And I have psyllium husk. I have 20 grams of fiber. And that will be my breakfast until lunch. And then I haven't been doing, just because of Trainer Road, we're so busy in the morning, I like to get I get the most done early in the morning when I get here, before everyone else gets here. I usually do my ride around 3:30 or 4 o'clock. And then, again, weightlifting, coffee room weightlifting. I space it out whenever I get a coffee or something like that, I go and try to do a set or two.
Yeah. As soon as I get up, I force myself to I do push-ups, and then I do just do a short core thing in the morning. That's like my first thing when I roll out of bed. I literally roll out onto my stomach to do that. And it's just, it's 100 push-ups, and then after that, I do like 2-minute plank thing, and then I do some more and some sit-ups. And that's like it in the morning.
No, so. I mean, here's something crazy. My wife this morning, by 7:30 a.m., she had ran a fasted half marathon.
And making you feel terrible.
Yeah, it's like, because I had a, I'm usually out the door before 7:30, but she wanted to run without the stroller. But she just gets up, and I don't think she eats a single thing, and she just goes and runs it, comes back, and she does like push-ups and sit-ups.
Yeah.
She's probably highly aerobically adapted. I mean, she's got a awesome aerobic fitness.
Yeah. So I do that, and then recently, since I've been on leave with the baby and everything else, my morning is a very relative term. Doesn't really apply to when the sun is rising anymore. I've been doing, in the mornings, I do 30 minutes on the rollers. And that's fasted, and it's on the mountain bike, and it's fun to try to not die while riding the rollers. So I've been doing that, and then later on in the day, I do my structured workout. So
three workouts, man. I want to hear all three. So that's what you said before.
I know, and I haven't held to. I haven't even done three yet. I've been doing one to two.
I don't think three is a good idea. What do you think, Chad?
So here's the deal.
Not on your sleep schedule.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Even with, I mean, if you were didn't have a job and no baby, then maybe three. But still, I would just do two then. Like do or just do one.
Yeah, if you have the time to break it up, right? And the three, to be clear, is what most people do in one or two workouts. It's just the fact that since my time is so, since the baby constantly needs us, well, I should say randomly needs us, it's hard to just say, I'm going to set aside 3 hours to train right now because I can't. So it's breaking that up into smaller chunks. It's not like I'm doing three hard interval sessions in a day, right? It's like if you were to ride with your, if you were to ride around the block with your kid and it took a half hour or something, it's a big block.
So you're doing an easy hour in the morning, hard workout in the at noon, then an easy workout to follow. Yeah, that's it's.
But he hasn't done three though.
I still haven't.
It's doable. I just think it's.
I guess I have done three once, but it's just been two workouts usually. It's been the easy and then the hard, and that's been it.
As long as you're getting that hard one and then the just a little extra icing on the cake with the extra easy one.
The other dads too. It starts to. I told your wife this last night. It starts to stack up. Like right now, you're still kind of fresh. It's what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's 3 weeks.
3 weeks, but it's wait until you're at like 6 months, right? And then all this stuff stacks up on each other. The not sleeping. It really depends on how Simon, your son's name, how he sleeps later. But
yeah, I feel like there's this
wears on initial you. You lines
hit,
in your face,
and this applies to everybody, regardless of a huge life change, right? Like initially, there's a huge adaptation curve. Some people can ride that wave really well, actually, and then it gives them motivation, something else like that. But that's it's really steep for me right now, and energy levels are extremely low.
I just think trying to get on the bike 3 times a day with the already busy life schedule is just
that's
too
the hard
much.
Thing, right? But at the same time, the way I try to look at it is a release of sorts to be able to just and one of the easy rides that when I did the three, one of the easy rides that I did was just cruising around. I actually had to test something out of my road bike. I was setting up some new equipment. It was just an easy ride around our neighborhood, right? And it was 30 minutes long, just easy as it gets. So, and that was more therapeutically beneficial to me than anything else, just to be able to do that. So,
another pro tip for the dads out there, and every dad knows this, but Jonathan, I would, if you could bunch them up into one ride and say, wife, your wife's name Sarah, I need 2 hours or 2.5 hours right now. And then I will give you 2.5 hours later where I'm going to do everything and you can leave or sleep, or I'm going to, better yet, put Simon in my car and I'm going to go drive somewhere with him.
Yep.
And we're not going to be back for 2.5 hours. That is a deal that gets made all the
That's
time.
A
and
saver right there.
both sides love it. It's when it interrupts both of you all the time and you're both there. And as the dad, you're always like, oh, I think I should be helping. And you like kind of like hover, but you're probably not helping.
Yeah, I learned after the first day that I'm pretty much useless because we're not using formula either. So it's I can do very little, right? So it's I can just take him away at times and help out. But
I saw a bottle last night though. So if you could.
We're not still not doing formula.
Yeah, but I mean, at least if you could get a bottle and you could go drive somewhere and if he wakes up.
Yes.
Feed him. But because then you could get one good aerobic workout. Yep. And then just be done.
Yeah, because that's the one thing that you have to acknowledge. If my theory of splitting things up into these shorter workouts, you get certain benefits when you're doing longer aerobic efforts or longer rides that I will not get with a 30-minute ride.
Yeah, you won't get it. 3 30-minute won't be the same as 190.
It's just not long enough, right? So that's one thing. If you can stretch that into bigger blocks and you can have that, you are going to have more opportunity to make
progress. If I could have my way with your schedule, I'd have you keep your noontime intensity and then in the evening get you on the bike for 2 hours of low-intensity work. Not every day either.
The only cyclists that I've heard of who really break it up to like three times or more times a day are track sprinters,
right?
Yeah.
Like track guys, and they'll
hit it for
15 minutes or 20 minutes, and they'll take like 3 hours off, and they'll do it again.
Yep.
Because that anaerobic.
And those are we're talking high level athletes too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a very different deal. So yeah, it's
you're high level, Jonathan.
Well, yeah.
But you're just you're aerobic racer.
These guys, I'm like dedicated
anaerobic.
I'm an average
athletes
guy.
Who do. They don't have jobs, basically. That is their job.
That is their job. That's similar to swimming, too, right? The swimmers do, like, the multi-day.
No, they just swim all day long.
They just swim all
like, day. They'll do two sessions, but it'll be, like, you know, 3 or 4 hours and then, like, a two-hour. Like, I mean, that's the top guys, but it's just many. That's why Phelps has that huge food. It's just hours
insane
and hours.
Insane amount of calories they bring.
Oh, man. And they can't watch TV. If you could, I've thought about that actually. Endless pool with like some kind of TV. Because I feel like I could be a better triathlete if I could watch TV.
Something super interesting with this really quick. Sorry. And we're just going to have one more question after this. But I was watching the Olympic swim trials that are going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really, I thought this was really interesting. They now go, and I don't know, maybe they've done this for a long time. I just realized this. Maybe it's just me realizing. But they go from the pool to a TV viewing room. Right after they get out of the pool. They did it at the trials. Every single one of them did. It wasn't to be on TV. It was for them to analyze. They had cameras under the lane in each person, and they went instantly back there to analyze their performance.
That's cool.
It's interesting. Yeah, and I think it's because for them, right, their technique is their speed. Like they have the fitness. Yeah. That's kind of like just the ticket to get in, but your technique is so important for those guys.
It's almost like I don't want to say half and half. It's probably like 80-20, but
right.
It's not like cycling or time trialing where it's just like, did you turn the pedals?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, look at the Tour de France. We can see there's a lot of varying technique going on there. So, I thought that was really
interesting. And it matters in cycling, but just not as much as swimming. You like have one, a little teeny thing in it, you lose a gold medal.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's end here with Sean's questions. And Sean says, from previous podcasts, you've said a kilojoule is usually 1 to 1 with a calorie. If two people were locked into erg mode on a trainer and produced the same exact amount of kilojoules, but one did it at 60% of max heart rate and the other at 95% of heart rate, max heart rate, wouldn't the guy working near max heart rate burn more calories?
No.
No, nope. No, because the one thing you're missing here, Sean, is one measures work and the other measures strain. So kilojoules, that's a measure of work. Heart rate, that's a measure of strain on each rider's body. The two don't always equate.
And that's why using heart rate to measure calorie burn is always pretty nebulous.
Problematic.
Silly.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. You can think of it like reduce it to like physics. And you think of a car using energy going up a hill. Like a car, the same weight, how much energy does it take to get from one spot? Maybe a car is the wrong one. If you take like you go back to like high school physics or something and you got to get a rock and it has to move up a hill. How much energy does it take to go up that hill? There's like a formula for that, and you're going against gravity. There's so much work that needs to go into it. Now, if the person's heart rate doesn't go into that at all.
Right.
The only thing I would say about this question is the person at 95% after the fact might be burning a little more calories.
You're talking
calories
about the afterburn, after the work,
yeah.
After the effort's
done. But we don't have measurable, we talked about this before, I don't know of a study that has measured that. Like, what's the metabolic cost after a very intense workout?
Yeah, Sean, this is really just a matter of efficiency, and you're comparing one hugely inefficient to a hugely efficient athlete. So the guy who's working at 60% and doling out or doing all this work, very efficient. But the guy who's burying himself at 95% and doing the same amount of work, hugely inefficient.
Efficient's, I don't think, the right word, because the heat dissipation and stuff is probably
that
part's the same.
The fact is his body's working a lot harder for the same amount of work.
Right.
That's
right.
Less efficiency.
His heart's beating faster.
doing more work, 95% of his max heart rate.
Well, not work is in more kilojoules.
He's enduring more strain. Sorry.
Yes. That's
there you
the
go.
Best
yes. That's the best way to say it.
Because
yeah.
when we say work, we're talking about the actual term, measurable term work.
Kilojoules.
Yeah, kilojoules. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the benefit of a power meter is you're measuring everything in those terms. So you can break it down. It's super easy. Your caloric consumption and intake just becomes a simple and easy to track formula.
This is why I don't like gyms. They'll have you have your hands on it. And then based on your heart rate, how much work you're doing, or if like me and Chad, my heart rate's much higher than Chad, although I am putting out less power than him and thus less work, less energy.
Yeah. Or Fitbits or anything else like that are trying to track calories by your steps.
Fitbit has a lawsuit against it. Did you know
really?
That?
Really?
Yeah. For inaccurate heart rate. Because of the optical sensor, and I think it's related to caloric burn too, but I'm not sure. But I know at least for heart rate, because their optical sensor, that little green light that you get, is supposedly, some people say, is not accurate, and they have a lawsuit. I don't know where it's at right now, but
for what it's worth,
I don't know if it's valid either. So I don't want to I don't want to say negative things about Fitbit, but it was interesting.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, the Fitbit Charge HR that I had, I smashed into a tree very hard, and it smashed. But so I don't have it anymore. But I actually found that thing to track. It was slow. It was like it was smooth. Like they had some processing to average the data to avoid spikes. But it was very, very close. It was just slower to respond to my Wahoo ticker, and the ticker is the best one that I've found so far. And that's a chest strap. So for what it's worth, it was good on my end, but I know Ray has said that it wasn't great on his. So,
Ray means DC Rainmaker.
DC Rainmaker, forgive me. Yes, the review king. So, Sean, he says, I've racked up several 100-mile rides, and I'm studying metrics during flat 100-milers. I have a lower normalized power, and I almost wonder if he meant to say higher here, but maybe not. Okay, so lower normalized power than on my climbing 100-milers. My strength is a punchy climber on both mountain bikes and road. Do you think the flat 100s are just mental, or should I focus the off season on building more time trial like sustained power?
Now that's basically, Sean, the basis or the purpose behind normalized power is to credit you for those harder efforts and to kind of smooth them into what you would have put out had you maintained steady power. So for a ride that's already steady, a normalized power that's going to be close to your average power is what you'd expect. But for a punchy climb, you're going to have a higher normalized power, both relative to your average power and relative to a flatter, less or non-punchy ride. So that's exactly in line with what normalized power is trying to convey.
And I don't think he should change any of his training because of that. It's just...
No.
You'll have a higher... Like, Jonathan had a really high NP on
his workout. Yeah, I think
it was
last night, the race was an hour and 20 minutes, roughly around there, and it was 285 normalized when all was said and done, but my average was like 250.
Yeah, exactly.
So, that's actually closer than I thought it would have been.
Yeah.
Mine's probably farther apart, because on the downhills, I think you were pedaling, and I was holding on for dear life.
Yeah. But there's... and that's a mountain bike race, so it's a lot of like ups and downs. And like a criterium, I see an even bigger gap a lot of the time. So it's normal to see that. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, everybody. Remember, you can submit your questions to us at trainerroad.com/podcast. You can see the latest episode on there as well. You can find this podcast wherever you listen to them. And if you're listening to podcasts somewhere where you don't see our podcast, please let us know. So then we can put it up there. If you're just listening to us on SoundCloud, but you have a different platform, we're all ears and willing. You can leave us reviews on there. We like 5-star ones. We appreciate it. Also use the hashtag AskTrainerRoad on the social platforms that you have, including Snapchat. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.